The LAR Files, the ultimate Rams podcast with Nate Lundy.
It is time for us to talk some Rams. Let's do it with Matt LaPan from NFLSpinZone.com, NFL writer there, also covering the NFL draft as well. But we're going to talk some Rams with Matt. You find him on Twitter at Matt LaPan. That's Matt underscore LAPAN. Matt, let's start here. Not a lot of huge expectations on this team going into the 2016 season, which means they've got some room for some mistakes or for the losses or what have you. But overall, how's this team looked to you? Grade, if you had to give them a letter grade from a preseason and a training camp standpoint.
That's a tough one. I mean, this team has some room for mistakes, but they also just mortgaged the future for the number one overall pick, and that number one overall pick is going to be sitting. And I think it was Jim Thomas back in St. Louis put out something earlier today. The first number one pick not to start week one since Jamarcus Russell. So you can't really give him a good grade on this preseason. I'd put it firmly at a C-. I think they had some good play outside of the quarterbacks, but going in after taking Goff number one overall and still having Sean Mannion as your starting quarterback, less than ideal.
When you look at this offense, obviously you just talked about Jared Goff. You look at Sean Mannion, you look at Case Keenum. I think everybody's willing to give, at least initially, the Rams a pass on the quarterback play only because it's either going to be a rookie or it's going to be somebody who is just holding the seat and keeping it warm for Goff. But you know, at the same time, I've got to think, to your point in expanding on it, there's some frustration that Goff isn't the starter week one. Where has his development fallen short, you think?
Well, I think it's not necessarily unexpected. It's the same place that everyone who covered the NFL draft said he would struggle, taking snaps under center and running an NFL offense. He was at Cal. He ran the quote-unquote bear raid offense where he almost never took a snap under center. It was quick, easy, one-look read. He wasn't asked to scan the field a lot. And I think he's developed a little bit in seeing the field better since the beginning camp all the way through to the end. But he can't really take a snap under center. His footwork is a little sloppy. And he's just not ready. They gave up essentially their next two drafts to get him. And he's just not ready. And it's a little disappointing. But again, there are some bright spots. He sees the field better now. His footwork is getting there. I think his confidence is getting there a little bit at the end of the preseason. But again, he didn't quite get the snaps that a normal number one pick would either, because Jeff Fisher and his staff thought he wasn't ready to play. So I think that the limited snaps are now, you know, the report that he's going to be inactive this week, really damaging his development.
Todd Gurley at running back, you know, if we sit back and look at this through the eyes of fantasy football, is everybody's darling. There are folks that think he can wind up being the top running back, you know, in terms of fantasy by the end of the year. Make the comparison here for me as we look at him, Matt, because as talented as he is, he's also running behind an offensive line that certainly needs some help. So where do you find the balance between such talented running back and not necessarily the best O-line for him to be behind?
I think you find it somewhere within the late in the first round of a fantasy draft. I still think that Todd Gurley has the ability to be one of the top backs. You know, the end of last season was frustrating for a lot of fantasy owners. He only would pick up about 60, 80 yards a game and get in the end zone once. There was that one standout game where he had only 19 yards, but I think the Rams were really banged up at the end of last year on the offensive line. Rob Imsen was hurt. Roger Saffold was gone. Your center position was a mess. Jamon Brown was gone, and Greg Robinson was kind of on an island. He was really the only starter left, and he kind of, frankly, looked disinterested at the end of last season. I think that you have all these guys back now. Everybody's kind of slotting into their natural spot. If the offensive line stays healthy, then Gurley's going to have a much better year. But can you trust that with some of these guys? You know, it's tough to call them injury-prone. Obviously, a lot of these guys have only been there a year. But have you seen, you know, lingering ankle, foot, knee issues? Jamon Brown, obviously, it's a freak accident coming back from a broken leg. but you never know exactly where his strength is going to be. He's been pretty good in the preseason, but you have to trust that offensive line. I personally would take one or two backs ahead of Gurley. I did pick up Gurley in a couple of my own fantasy leagues because I think he's going to get an expanded role, not just running, but receiving as well. But again, you know, it's quarterback play, it's offensive line play around him. I think he's the most talented running back in the NFL, but the supporting cast isn't quite there for him to be the number one back.
Matt, when you look at this team, it's hard to argue that their best that their best spot on the field is in fact their defensive line and certainly what they have potentially in the front seven. That's a strength for them. Do they have any weaknesses when you look at that front seven?
I think in the front seven, the weakness is going to be at the linebacker position. You have Alec Ogletree, who's taking over the role of being the number one linebacker, the signal caller. You know, James Laurinaitis left, and Akeem Ayers, the Rams cut him thinking they would get him back at a better deal, came out this afternoon, he signed with the Colts. So they kind of left themselves a little short at linebacker. You have Mark Barron playing that kind of quote-unquote star role, as known around a lot of league circles. But then who else do you have? I mean, you're looking at Bryce Hager getting major snaps, or maybe Josh Forrest getting major snaps as a rookie. I think that you really, the Rams really kind of, they hedged their bets and they lost. They showed their hand to Ayers and he went elsewhere. I think that's really their only deficiency on the front seven. I mean, the front line, you can't really compete with. Robert Quinn has looked like he's back to himself. He's not injured anymore. He's back to himself. Aaron Donald is one of the most explosive defensive players in the entire league. You have Michael Brockers, who really came into his own last year. One of the shining moments of the year came right at the beginning of the year in that overtime win over Seattle in week one, where he went bursting into the backfield and took down Marshawn Lynch one-on-one. Not a lot of defensive tackles can do that, and he showed that throughout the year. He really improved. And I think this preseason, he's come in, looks a little slimmer in the middle, but still has the power. He's been getting into the backfield a little more. That defensive line, for my money, best D-line in the NFL.
When you get ready to sit down to watch the game against the Niners on Monday night, the second game of the doubleheader, what's the one thing, Matt, that you're going to make sure that you're watching for on the field with this Rams squad?
I'm going to be looking for what the wide receivers can do. You know, Case Keenum, not the most talented guy, but he's got a little bit of skill, and really he was let down by his wide receivers last year just because there wasn't much talent. Tavon Austin, we know, is the most talented of the group. They're going to use him all over the field. They're going to use him on runs. They're going to use him on screens, little flare routes. Then you have to look at what else is going to be there. Kenny Britt getting down the field, not necessarily a reliable option. One of the worst completion percentages to him in the NFL. Then you have Farrell Cooper, who's been injured. You know, what are you going to get from him throughout the year? Probably not going to see him in week one. Then it's down to Mike Thomas, who had arguably the most disappointing preseason of any player on the team. They had high hopes for him coming in. He has good size, good length, and he just did not perform. He couldn't really grasp the offense, it appeared. So seeing what those wide receivers are able to do to clear up a little bit of space for Todd Gurley in that running game is going to be key.
Matt LaPan with us, writer for NFLSpinZone.com, covering the Rams, covering the NFL, and also the NFL draft. Matt is on Twitter at Matt LaPan. That's Matt underscore LaPan, LaPan. Matt, really appreciate the time here on the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Looking forward to a great season.
Matt wrapping up with us. That means the coach, Brian Billick, is up next. Stick around.
Around the league
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
Well, I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball off to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense, I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am, and I'm not, from the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in the first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise, and I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team. And Don McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford, I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, a little better than 1-1 touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line is Ezekiel Elliott could be a huge plus for them, but that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Michael Larkin. He goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to get. Remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement, obviously, Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at that Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team, but that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? So you don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. The preseason was just not going to be important. So, it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like a Mike Blark. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk, okay. But he's not bad. This David Johnson is pretty good. They want to run the ball well, and if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. They're going to play great defense. Typically, you look at this, and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball, and all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball then? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when they went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bills team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength for the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan, or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do, more so than any team in the league. They morph from one week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times one week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo, you know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you, and we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second wind during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed and you kind of get that second wind kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've played the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season, them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience. One team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And then also maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady Eddie, keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. Had sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there's was a quarterback who's played, you know, in the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. You know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five, Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No. It's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes the national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me whether we're talking college football or pro football. You know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.